Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime. Two bodies are found murdered.
Sure.
I think it's from the olden time and days.
Why would you say such a thing? Somebody has died.
I'm very offended by your accents.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
We are joined this week by comedian Gráinne Maguire. Yay! Thank you for coming.
A pleasure.
How are you?
I am very, very well.
Sweet. And how's the old beer going down?
Oh my God, it's so delicious.
So we are mixing our drinks now. We are drinking Beavertown beer, which is awesome. Which flavour have you got there?
I've got the blood orange.
You've got blood orange. What have you got, Hannah?
I think it just says IPA.
It's got like skull and crossbones on it. And you've got,
yeah,
you've got
I'm
Taylor's.
On the blood orange as well, and I think it's delicious. I've been on it for days.
Okay.
I have, because it's not sweet. Like, it sounds sweet, but it's just got this, oh, it's subtle and it's gone down so
nice. It's so good. So thank you, Beavertown. Gráinne, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Somebody attempted to successfully commit a crime.
Uh-oh.
I fought back.
Yes.
Brilliant. What happened?
So I was going up to stay in Edinburgh during the festival and I was renting a flat with a friend. Now, I arrived first. I walked into this palace. It was amazing. So I text the girl I was staying with, Holly Byrne, saying, this place is incredible. Well done. She texts our landlord saying, oh my God, my friend's just arrived. Apparently the place is amazing. So then Holly arrived a few hours later and correctly identified the place as a death trap.
Wow.
She was like, this, we can't stay here. There's wires all over the place. There's no emergency exits. No,
oh, wow.
We have to go. We have to leave. genuinely true. So we had to get other accommodation. So then Holly tried to get our money back.
Right.
But the landlord used as proof the fact that the flat was fine the text message that I had sent.
Got it in writing.
Got it in writing. Badly spelt writing. So I had to give our solicitor permission to give a written statement that I had unusually low standards.
That is amazing. Oh my God.
So this was put in a court of law.
It's a law document.
I think set a legal precedent. And we won our case. We got our money back.
Oh my God. There's just so much about that.
That is a blaze of glory. That is... Did people have to testify?
Well, I was going to use in evidence, like ex-boyfriends.
I'm here to tell you. Now, does this ruling, this official court ruling, is this going to affect future ventures for you? I'm just wondering what sort of knock-on effect it might have.
Well, I think I've set a legal precedent. I think, like, in future cases, bad personal choices can be used as mitigating circumstances.
Yeah. She's done a gone room Maguire. Yeah.
You've had Roe versus Wade. You've got Maguire versus
the stodgy landlord.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Are there any specific things about the flat that Holly sort of like pointed out?
I think it was like wiring
that was exposed.
That was exposed. The fact,
and
that
you thought, oh, it's just so urban and like
no,
edgy.
I just thought it was amazing. I just thought it was absolutely. There was no fire escape. That was another thing. And I was like, not every flat has to have a fire escape. And
God, nanny state taking over.
Yeah, yeah. If you're meant to survive, you'll survive. That's what we say in Ireland.
Health and safety's gone mad.
And just, yeah, there was like, I think like the electricity would hum a little bit when you
and spark,
yeah, maybe. A few sparks. But I was just so excited. I was like, oh, the Edinburgh tattoo has started already.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Shall we move on to the crime that we need to solve now? This case has it all. Two bodies are found murdered. Sure.
Sure, hey.
At their home.
But that's not the main thing about them. They're people. They happen to be murdered.
They're probably women.
Stop focusing on it. They're found at their home on the morning of Thursday, August the 4th. One body was decided to have been killed between 9 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. and the second body between 10:30 a.m. and 11:10 a.m. The first body had been struck on the side of the head with a hatchet, ooh, fallen, and then been struck multiple times to the back of the head. The second body had been struck 10 or 11 times with a hatchet-like weapon, and one of the eyeballs had been split cleanly in two, suggesting that they had been asleep when attacked.
Oh, well, that at least...
Yeah, yeah. What I mean.
You think that would wake them up?
Yeah, on the 11th blow. Wait a minute.
Is there something in my eye, Eldrin?
Snooze.
So it's a pretty gruesome one. Just off the bat, do you think the bodies were male or female?
One of each.
Good guess. Yeah. Any advance on that?
I don't know. I don't see gender. We don't know how they identify.
All right.
I went in for female to begin with, so I'm going to stick with two women.
Two women, one man and one woman, mm-hmm, and Gronya just not relevant. So.
Did you meet that new progressive Irish woman on the force? She's never going to last. Let's split her eyeball in half. Yeah, yeah.
I can reveal that Taylor is correct. They are one of each. It's Abby and Andrew Borden, and they're a husband and wife.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, before I give you a bit more information about them, do you think that the main suspect in this case was male or female? Gronya, don't even answer. No. You can, if you've changed your ways, you can answer.
I recognise his surname.
Oh, do you know this case?
I think so.
See, Gronya reads all about history.
Oh. It's my favourite place, the past.
Ooh, okay.
So I don't know. Okay. I've just remembered as well, I can speak an old-timey American.
Okay.
Have a go. Have a
that
go.
That might come in handy.
So, where do we think? What gender do we think? Oh my God, you look so angry.
No, 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 so I'm angry. No, not at all. I can do an Irish accent and you'll feel the same way.
Accent off.
Taylor, why would you say such a thing? Somebody has died.
I was transported to colonial times.
I'm very offended by your accents. I think I'm in Bristol.
A murder has occurred.
Yeah, yours is better. You win.
So it's, I mean, I'm getting a sort of a big vibe from Gráinne that it's happened maybe in colonial times at in the Midwest.
Yeah, we've given, yeah, like, I mean, actually.
She's ruined the game, basically.
No, it's good. I was actually, luckily, going to reveal quite a lot of stuff at the top just so that we can discuss the case without.
I think it was a male assailant, though, to answer your question.
Okay.
Yeah, men love
because it's a violent crime, right? Hannah?
Yeah, probably a man because it's a very violent crime.
Okay. And we've just touched on this. What era do you think this was?
I think it's from the olden time of days. I think it's right from where Gráinne was a few minutes ago.
1897?
It's actually 1892.
Woo! Oh my God, I have so many skills.
A bit about Andrew and Abby. Abby was actually Andrew's second wife.
Ooh.
Yeah, there we go. All the drams. His first wife, Sarah, had died in 1863, leaving him with two girls, Lizzie and Emma. 3 years after his first wife's death, he married Abby. Andrew was rich, religious, and very frugal. So his house lacked indoor plumbing and electricity, even though that was a common accommodation for wealthy people at the time. So that I don't know if it's because he was like he just struggled in his youth or if he was just religious, but he was super frugal. So we've sort of touched on this. Do you think the main suspect was male or female now that you know a bit more about it?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, maybe if it was a kind of a spurned lover, I'd say maybe a female.
Okay.
But, I've not got a lot about motive yet. I don't know why anyone would want to kill these kind of nice people unless it was her killing him for being so frugal and then killing herself. Yeah. But you can't really kill yourself with a hatchet job to the back of your head. So
okay. All good insights. I like it. I like the way you think. You're getting promoted.
Thank you.
So the main suspect was a woman, the daughter, Lizzie Borden.
Oh.
Bit about Lizzie.
Give me your money, you tight bastard, she said as she struck them in the back of the head. Quite and you're possibly. Not my mom, yeah, she said.
All of that stuff.
Yeah.
Possibly. So Lizzie and her older sister Emma had a very religious upbringing. They're very involved in church activities. They taught Sunday school to children of recent immigrants.
Is this in America, by the way?
Yes, sorry. Yeah, I should have. Yeah,
the East Coast, wasn't it?
It's Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's from Massachusetts. Do you see? We're very happy here in the fall.
So, you know, poor old Lizzie, sympathy too. She lost her mum at 3. Dad remarried when she's 6. She's going to go down for this. That's not fair.
And she can't even take a shower. Can you just like get into poor Lizzie's situation?
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, she's give up a little bit of your money, you religious prick.
So there's no hot water.
Yeah, they don't have plumbing.
Oh, they don't have plumbing.
Because he's a miser. He's fucking like Ebenezer, Massachusetts Scrooge. Yeah. Hold him back.
Whoa. He is.
I'm angry. I get angry at every father in every case. And I love my dad. It has nothing to do with my own issues.
I think it's because you don't have any of your own. So you're like, I finally got some daddy issues, but it's of all the people that have been murdered.
Yes, vicarious daddy issues. Yes. Now I'm doing Gráinne as well.
So do you think that Lizzie has a good relationship with her stepmom?
I don't. So I'm just guessing here, but I'm thinking of Lizzie, like classic, like maybe the mum's like sort of like maybe young or maybe younger. So I think she doesn't like her. She thinks she's fucking annoying. She doesn't get on with her.
Okay.
Well, if we're assuming that she goes on to kill her, I guess not.
Okay. Same.
Just to be different, I'm going to say they were besties.
Okay, cool. Yeah. They didn't care. Thanks for providing variety, but during police questioning at the inquest, Lizzie stated that she called her stepmother Mrs. Borden. Whoa. And demurred on whether they had a cordial relationship. And there is also a suggestion that Lizzie believed that Abby was after her father's money. Mm. So there are other suspects. Let's meet the other players, yo.
Come on.
Bridget Sullivan, she is the live-in maid for the family. Her nickname was Maggie.
Oh, Mr. Yeah. Borden, do you want any more water? That's, I'm playing her. Yes.
Okay, that was
like she's in the room.
She's coming alive.
I wouldn't murder anyone, and if I did, I'd just be having a laugh.
Spot on, I imagine. So the other sister, Emma, who's older by 10 years, John Vinegum Morrissey. He's the brother of Lizzie and Emma's deceased mother.
So Uncle Morrissey.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think that Abby's family could be on here because they could be after the money. So two things you need to know now.
Okay.
There had been a lot of tension in the family. No shit. leading up to these murders. And the second thing you need to know is it was very, very hot. And everyone knows everyone flips out and kills people when it's hot.
Yeah.
Sure.
So some of the tensions is sort of like...
Of course, haven't you read Camus?
There were gradual kind of like an estrangement also... almost that good words that led to division and hostility to do with money and property. The maid testified that Lizzie and Emma rarely ate meals with their parents. In May 1892, Andrew killed some pigeons in his barn with a hatchet, believing that they were attracting local children to hunt them, and that Lizzie had recently built a roost for the pigeons and was upset that they were killed. So is that a good motive? Do you think Lizzie flipped out and killed her parents due to her beloved pigeons being cruelly snuffed out? It was hot, remember? People do weird shit when it's hot. So now a family argument prompted both sisters to take extended vacations in New Bedford. After returning to Fall River a week before the murders, Lizzie chose to stay in a local rooming house for 4 days before returning to the family residence. Instead of coming straight home, like, is this suspicious? Or maybe that's because she just wanted an indoor toilet. Am I right, Taylor? High five.
This all comes down to plumbing. It always does.
She's around the same time as little women. Why? This blows my brain. But do you not think, like, this is basically fan fiction of one of little women killing somebody. This is Joe gone mad.
Yeah, Little Women's Laters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beth Flips.
Late night Little Women.
Beth Flips. I love that. I would read the shit out of that. Yeah.
Just to recap the timeline, May, pigeons brutally murdered. July, family argument, both sisters storm off in a half. August, they come back and a murder happens.
Mm. How old were the sisters at this point?
So I worked this out. I think that they were like 30. Hang on.
They're children.
Yeah, no, so...
Babies.
Babies.
Yeah, Lizzie must have been 32 and her sister, her other sister is like 10 years older than her. Unless I'm bad at maths, which we cannot rule out. a lot of the family tension was believed to be over Andrew's gifts of real estate to various branches of Abby's family. Mm. So this is what Lizzie was worried about. Also pigeons.
Yeah. Sure.
So the sisters are annoyed because Andrew's trying to be all like Oprah and going, you get a house and you get a house and you get a house to all these people that have married in. And then... after their stepmother's sister received a house, the sisters, Lizzie and Emma, demanded, and then they did receive a rental property as well that dad gave them, it was the house that they'd lived in until their mother had died, which they purchased.
Haunted house.
It's a nice haunted house. and they purchased it from their dad for $1. And a few weeks before the murders, they sold the property back to their dad for $5,000, which is the equivalent of $136,000 today.
Maybe it was a way to cover their tracks, though, because if they had tried to make like a tidy little profit on that, sold it back, I'm cutting ties with you. We're good. We're all set.
Yeah,
we have the $130,000 / $8,000.
So it could well be that.
Yeah.
That would make sense of it, actually. Okay. Good. You're getting promoted, too.
Thank you. That's all I wanted.
Enter John Vinicum Morrissey, the brother of the real dead mother. When do you think he reappears? So, like, we're getting closer to the time of the murders. Do you think he's propped up, like, maybe a month before, a day before, a week before? When does he come back?
I think he arrives the night before in a carriage during a storm.
Ooh. I love it. Any advance on the night before?
I think he arrives the night after the murder.
Ooh.
Yeah, you know, kind of just be like, oh, I've just been in town on business. Mm. And then he winks and says, murder business. And then he says, how y'all doing? And then...
And then he does a surprised face when they tell him.
Yes, and then he flees the country. So I think night after.
Okay, all very good guesses. I can now reveal that Gráinne is correct.
What did Gráinne say?
The night before.
The night before during a thunderstorm.
That was all true, right?
Was it a thunderstorm?
Yeah, they've written that down. That's what. That's it's definitely a
maximum drama. The answer is always maximum drama.
Okay, the night before the murders, John Vinicum Morrissey, the brother of Lizzie and Emma's deceased mother, visited and was invited to stay for a few days to discuss business matters with Andrew, the dead guy. Some writers have speculated that their conversation, particularly about property transfer, may have aggravated an already tense situation. So,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cleaning the guest rooms was usually one of Lizzie and Emma's regular chores, but unusually it was Abby, the new wife of, but she's been around now, who went to make the bed of the room that John Morrissey had just slept in. So that's already unusual because that was one of their jobs. According to forensic evidence, Abby was facing her killer at the time of the attack. She was first struck on the side of the head with a hatchet, which cut her jaw just above the ear, causing her to turn and fall face down on the floor, creating contusions. On her nose and forehead. Her killer then struck her multiple times, delivering 17 direct hits to the back of her head until she was dead. This occurred between 9 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. So she goes to make the bed and is killed in the bedroom.
I get it now.
I was ahead of
somebody
myself.
Somebody sent her up to the room to whack her.
Yes, possibly, definitely. After breakfast, Andrew and Morrissey went to the sitting room where they chatted.
So hang on a sec, sorry. So... are they just downstairs and they don't realise she's been killed upstairs?
I think she hasn't quite died yet. I think basically after breakfast, Andrew and Morrissey go to the sitting room where they... Yeah, no, hang on. So she's probably in the kitchen right now. Mm-hmm. They've all had breakfast. They go to the sitting room and they chat for almost an hour. Morrissey leaves to go...
Oh, what shall we do about the copper market?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. A little bit of colour there from Gráinne Maguire.
Trains are the future.
So, at 8:48 a.m, they're sitting in the thing chatting for an hour. Morse left to visit a relative at 8:48 a.m.
Wait, what?
Morrissey left to visit a relative at 8:48 a.m. Andrew left for his morning walk sometime after 9 a.m. Kind of feel like they both now don't have an alibi, because we know that as soon as they've gone out, that is the window of opportunity for her death. When Andrew returned at around 10:30 a.m, his key failed to open the door, so he knocked for attention. The Borden's maid, Bridget Maggie, that's
okay,
her nickname,
I'm ready. What does she say?
You can choose what you want to do for this. She went to unlock the door. Finding it jammed, she uttered an expletive.
Oh, English people.
Oh no, she did.
She would later testify that she heard Lizzie laughing immediately after this. She did not see Lizzie, but stated that the laughter was coming from the top of the stairs. This was later considered significant because Abby's body was visible through the gap between the bed and the floor when climbing the stairs, only becoming hidden by the bed upon reaching the top. Lizzie later denied being upstairs and testified that her father had asked where Abby was and that she had replied that a messenger had delivered a summons to visit a sick friend. So Andrew comes in. Nobody has been discovered yet. Lizzie stated that she then removed Andrew's boots and helped him into his slippers before he lay down on the sofa for a nap.
That's gross. I'm just going
to
throw
How
that
difficult
in there.
Is it to get into your own slippers? And They're what? Literally the easiest thing to put on.
So why are you napping at 10:30 in the morning? You've just had breakfast.
You're a freelancer. Come on, you know. You fucking know.
That's wank time, isn't it? It is.
For an hour and a half. Or it could have happened any time between 10:30 and midday, then lunch, then a bit of work, then another
Best
wank.
Best alibi. Your Honour, I was having a wank. So she says she took off his shoes and put on his slippers for his nap, but in his death photo, his shoes are clearly visible and he's still wearing them. So either that's a lie or he put his own shoes back on.
For his death photo.
Yeah. He wanted to look smart.
Yes, I may be dead, but I
had good shoes.
Yeah, I have a little class about me.
So she then informed Bridget, the maid, who was also called Maggie, of a department store sale and permitted her to go. But Bridget felt unwell and went to take a nap in her bedroom instead.
With everybody napping? Yeah. It's 10:30.
So
it's 10:30.
It's 10:30. It's over the top. Bridget testified that she was in her third floor room resting from cleaning windows when just before 11:10 a.m. she heard Lizzie call from downstairs, "Maggie, come quick, father's dead, somebody came and killed him." Do you want to take that for us?
Bridget, come quick, somebody's killed Papa.
This episode has got a lot of theatre to it. I'm very excited.
Papa's been murdered, seriously. Somebody call the police.
This episode has got a lot of drama. So Andrew was slumped on a couch in the downstairs sitting room, struck 10 or 11 times with a hatchet-like weapon. One of his eyeballs had been split cleanly in two, suggesting that he had been asleep when attacked. His still bleeding wounds suggested a very recent attack. So we've got our two dead bodies. We've got Lizzie, our main suspect. Lizzie's answers to police officers' questions were at times strange and contradictory. Initially, she reported hearing a groan or a scraping noise or a distress call before entering the house. But 2 hours later, she said that she had heard nothing and entered the house not realising that anything was wrong. When asked where her stepmother was, she recounted that Abby had received a note to go and visit a sick friend. She also stated that she thought Abby had returned and asked if someone could go upstairs and look for her. So most of the officers who interviewed Lizzie reported that they disliked her attitude. Some said she was too calm and poised. Despite Lizzie's attitude and changing alibis, nobody bothered to check her for bloodstains. I mean, that's detecting 101, guys.
It is amateurs, isn't it? Yeah.
So, we are better than these clowns at solving.
I think I did. She was just stood there, literally covered in blood, blood.
Yeah. We don't like your attitude, but we're not going to take this any further.
She's
bloody
blood, but it's more the fact she's very yappy. That's the problem with.
Although, actually, thinking about the whole being rich and the whole class thing, that might be more of a reason that maybe they didn't feel that they could investigate her.
Yeah, it seems like rich women, but we've had a little sort of run of these at the moment with the crimes, is that rich women seem to be able to get away with everything.
Yeah.
Which is why I want to be rich so bad.
So you can do all that criming.
Oh, man! So much crime.
It's like working in the arts. If you're a rich white girl, so much easier, isn't it? Murder and working in the arts.
Very similar.
The two best ones. The police did a search of her room, but it was merely a cursory inspection, and at the trial they admitted to not doing a proper search because Lizzie was not feeling well. In the basement, the police found two hatchets, two axes, and a hatchet head with a broken handle. So in the house, but in the basement. That night, the sister's friend, Alice Russell, this is the first we've heard of her, decided to stay with them.
Who the fuck is Alice?
Nice. The next morning, Alice, the friend that we've only just heard about, immortalised in song by Gronje, entered the kitchen to find Lizzie tearing up a dress. Lizzie explained that she was planning to put it on the fire because it was covered in paint.
Was it red paint?
I think so. It was never determined whether or not it was the dress she had been wearing on the day of the murders. Okay, so Lizzie goes to an inquest hearing on August the 8th, and her request to have her family attorney present was refused under a state statute providing that an inquest might be held in private. So up to now, she sounds pretty guilty. Mm-hmm. Now, at this point, Lizzie gets prescribed something to calm her nerves. What do you think she gets prescribed?
Valium.
Laudanum.
What's laudanum?
Laudanum?
Laudanum.
That sexy. Was like heroin they used to all the artists in the 90s.
Oh, okay. All right. Any advance on that?
Maybe just prescribed a little bit of love and a little bit of attention, a little bit of respect.
That's very nice. Well, Gwanya, you're officially the closest. Morphine. She gets prescribed regular doses of morphine to calm her nerves. And it says here, it's possible that her testimony was affected by this. You think? I mean, like, why wouldn't, like, as well now, wouldn't being high on morphine make everything you said inadmissible?
Yeah, no, like, yeah.
Why not give her a cup of tea to start with?
Is that I've watched 24 hours in police custody, and they have to ask, are you on any drugs? And then they let them dry out.
Ooh.
And then they interview them, because you can't legally interview
someone. Where's the fun in that?
Needless to say, Lizzie was a sloppy bitch on the stand.
Love it, love it. I'm loving Lizzie at the moment.
Yeah.
She's the heroine of this whole. She's the only one that makes sense.
Team Lizzie, huh?
100%.
Okay, so Lizzie's behaviour was erratic and she often refused to answer questions even if the answer would be beneficial to her. I just think it could be the morphine. She often contradicted herself, such as claiming to have been in the kitchen reading a magazine when her father arrived home, and then claiming to have been in the dining room doing some ironing, and then claiming to have been coming down the stairs. Could be the morphine, I reckon.
Do you know what? Women have so many fucking jobs to do in the house that maybe she doesn't know all because she's always tidying up after people.
Yeah.
The men would be easy because it's always like, I was sitting in the chair by the fire
and I was there for 3 hours.
Yeah. And then someone came and changed my shoes to slippers. And that's all I remember.
Totally. She also claimed to have removed her father's boots and put the slippers on. But the photograph shows he's wearing the boots. Morphine. The district attorney was very aggressive and confrontational. On August 11th, Lizzie was served with a warrant of arrest and jailed. The inquest testimony, the basis of the modern debate regarding her guilt or innocence, was later ruled inadmissible at her trial in June 1893. I think because of the morphine. A grand jury began hearing evidence on November the 7th, and Lizzie was indicted on December the 2nd. Her trial took place in June 1893. In conclusion, they acquitted Lizzie.
Oh, yes!
Do you think anyone else went down for the crime?
I think that little Irish maid probably was in trouble.
No one else was charged, and the murder continues to be the subject of research and speculation. Although Lizzie remained the prime suspect. There are other people's theories over the years have included that Lizzie did it, but committed the murders in a fugue state. Or like on morphine or whatever. Mm. One theory was that her father sexually abused her, although there is no evidence for this, but there never is. Am I right? There's one that said that the maid did it, possibly in a rage at being ordered to clean the windows on a hot day.
Because remember,
it was really hot.
Yeah. I'm not cleaning your fucking windows.
So, of course, somebody suggested that Lizzie did it because she was a lesbian. Mm. And was caught in a sapphic tryst with the maid. Does anyone want to guess the gender of the person that came up with that suggestion?
I don't see gender. I've learned that from my friend Gwendolyn McGuire. I think she's very wise.
She's so wise. Yeah, a man, Ed McBain, put forward that theory in his 1984 novel Lizzie. In his defence,
Lizzie would have been better.
Would have been so much better. In later years, Lizzie was rumoured to be a lesbian, but there was no such speculation about Bridget, who found other employment and married a man.
Mm. Good for her.
Abby was ruled to have died before Andrew, so her estate went to Andrew, and then when he died, because he died last, everything passed to his daughters as part of his estate, which is a considerable settlement. However, some was paid to Abby's family to calm them down. And then Lizzie changed her name to Lisbeth, not that different.
Elizabeth, they'll never find me.
And her and her sister bought a house together. Despite the acquittal, she was ostracised by Fall River Society, and the sisters eventually fell out in 1905 and never saw each other again. Aww. Elizabeth died of pneumonia. pneumonia on June the 1st, 1927, and 9 days later, Emma died from chronic nephritis at the age of 76. And Lizzie left $30,000 to an animal rescue league.
For pigeons.
Oh, the pigeon drama. So this is creepy. I know we don't have time, but there was like the case was memorialized in a popular skipping rope rhyme song to the tune of then popular song Ta-ra-ra Boom DJ. And the lyrics to it go,
go on.
Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
Can I give you a little beat behind that?
Yeah.
maybe not.
But
see, and people that don't understand Tupac.
But obviously, in reality, they suffered 18 or 19 blows. So this folklore song is not accurate. Do you guys think that Lizzie did it?
It's weird, because of all the murders. It's really mythologized in American culture. Mm. Like, I've heard of Lizzie Borden. Right. I wonder why is that? Because I'm sure loads of people fucking.
I think it must be like way famous.
Yeah. Why do you think, Taylor?
As an American, I have never heard of this. And I didn't have many friends, so I didn't skip rope.
I think
I was left out of everything.
I think Taylor.
Okay, Grania. Now it's personal.
I think Taylor
now
Swift
did it. Now it's personal.
Taylor Swift did it because she's petty. No, I think Lizzie did it, and I think she was just couldn't take any more of her dad's shit, and I'm on team Lizzie. I'm glad.
Okay.
I didn't like her dad. Didn't like her mum. Fucking glad they're dead.
Cool.
Drunk women solving crime.
One of our listeners has written in with a crime they want us to solve.
No.
For reals. Dear drunk women, someone genuinely stole our doorbell. If you want to investigate that, we do. It's hard to say if it was whipped off in a rage or if it was a more skilled attack. It had been pulled off the wall outside. Who would do this and why? What can we do? From Jim.
Wow. Okay, Jim. Firstly, my first suspicion is maybe like a kind of like guy from Amazon or a guy from like, you know, one of the ones that claimed to have rang your doorbell.
Yeah.
And then you get a thing through the post saying, oh, we rang your doorbell, but you weren't in. I was fucking in. I was in all day. Yeah. I'm always in all day. I'm very alone. But the point is, maybe it was them because they never ring your doorbell. So they may as well just whip it off. They've got an excuse.
Yes. I like it. Motive, opportunity.
Absolutely.
I was thinking Jehovah's Witness. Yeah. That was like, if you don't join, then I'll fucking take your doorbell.
Right.
Yeah, you don't hear the call of God, you won't hear the call of anyone, motherfucker.
Ooh.
Yeah.
An aggressive Jehovah's Witness.
Mm.
Yeah, means motive, opportunity.
I think it was Lizzie Borden.
The ghost of Lizzie Borden.
And I think you should just let it be. On a serious note, whoever took your doorbell is doing you a favour. Because what sort of creeps call around to your house, like texting or ringing you first? So they were doing you a favour.
Yeah,
that's
in the modern
true.
World.
People don't just, it's like when you're a kid, people call for you. But you don't have that anymore. If like one of my mates in their 30s, like, just knocks me.
knock, knock. Can I have a cup of tea, please?
You don't knock for someone in your 30s.
No.
Yeah, he's better off without.
Yeah. You don't need a doorbell.
So
be free.
It was a, what's the word? A benevolent.
Yeah. His guardian angel's doorbell.
So
his guardian angel, Lizzie Borden.
Act of God, Jim, we think.
hope that's useful, Jim.
Good luck. Your insurance forms there.
Lizzie Borden. I imagine this is a box you can take for Lizzie Borden on insurance forms.
When you file it out with the police, say act of God. You're welcome. Thank you. Before we go, we would like to ask our esteemed guest, Gwenny McGuire, what are you up to?
Is it accent coaching?
I do. That's my job now. I help people to learn how to do any American accent they like. So if you've got any, if you would like to learn how to do an American accent, and if you're not from the United States, contact me at Growing in Maguire on Twitter. It's the best way to find me. And I will take you through all 50 of the beautiful states and their unique accent and culture. And it's a riot. So that's what I do now mainly.
Okay. That's
excellent. I'm from Arizona.
The proof is in the pudding. I mean,
there we have it. Need we say any more?
And also, sorry, I feel like I pushed that on you. Do you also have a podcast you want to bring?
No, my accent. That's what I'm all about.
Okay, Hawaii. I want to keep
my
going.
My name is Barack Obama.
Nice.
Smashed it.
Okay, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Unicorn Tears. Thank you, Beaver Town.
Oh, it's lovely.
And
very nice.
Thank you so much to Firebox for sending us all these amazing snacks and drinks. Bye-bye!
Yay!
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast, and thank you for listening. Bye!
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.